Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me in studio right now is a Democratic candidate for State Attorney General Dana Nessel. Dana, welcome to the Copper Country.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're coming up here in some good weather time, too. We were just talking before starting, you know, here this time of year could be kind of hit and miss, so it's we're glad we're able to provide some good travel weather for you. As you're going through the Copper Country and through the Upper Peninsula and you're talking to people, what are you hearing are the issues that are important to them?
You know, the thing that's interesting to me is I expected when I started this campaign that maybe people's concerns would be more regionally oriented, but they're really not. I hear the same things from people no matter where they're from in this state. Personally, I think that this office, the office I'm running for, Michigan Attorney General, has changed markedly from the days of when everybody remembers Frank Kelly, or at least most of us who are of a certain age remember when he was in office. And that was an office that was really utilized to protect residents in this state. And whether it was issues of environmental protection or consumer protection, protecting seniors, we had someone in that office that really seemed dedicated to protecting people in this state. And, you know, I just don't see that anymore. And people have the same concerns wherever I go about issues like that.
Well, there are a number of candidates running for this office, a couple on the Republican side, some on the Democrat side as well that you're running up against for the primary. And up here, you know, we're not as isolated as some people think, but we are in a little bit in that we don't, you know, normally see some of the same names in the news that, you know, may make the news downstate. So let's get to know you a little bit. What can you tell me about your background?
Well, I'm a lifelong Michigander. I went to the University of Michigan for undergrad and Wayne State Law School, and went right out of law school to the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office. So I was there for over a decade, prosecuted basically every kind of case you can imagine. I was specially assigned to prosecute homicides, serial rapists, child abuse cases, did a lot of shaken baby cases on child homicide deaths, and, you know, domestic violence cases, really any kind of case you can imagine, I handled it there. But after 11 years of that office, I left and I did something very different from anybody really who's held this office, and that's I went to the other table and I recognized a real need for indigent defendants, people who are too poor to be able to afford an attorney, to have competent counsel. And that to me was a real failure in the system. So I began to represent poor people on court-appointed cases and really saw a lot of people who were trapped in the criminal justice system that had no place there. I mean, mentally ill people, veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, a lot of people with substance abuse issues, and most recently, a lot of opioid addicts.
Now, you also, at least at some point, started championing different causes and became nationally known just for your case. And I want to be I want you to be able to one to frame it in, you know, the best way you would like to. But yeah, you became known as a champion for, you know, LGBT rights.
Right. Well, you know, we had a real dearth of attorneys out there that were representing people on these issues, and we had a lot of people that were being very badly hurt. We have still, but especially when I started doing this work, the worst laws on the books really anywhere in the country on LGBT issues. A lot of people in the LGBT community would refer to Michigan as Mississippi because our laws were actually so much worse than even some of the states in the South, which is unusual because Michigan, I think, is a stalwart for civil rights. It has been historically. We were always on the cutting edge when it came to civil rights cases, but not when it involved civil rights for the LGBTQ community. So I started to handle some of those cases, and that eventually led me to a couple of women who came to me by the name of April DeBoer and Jane Rouse. They were a same-sex couple, been together for many years. There were also nurses. One was an emergency room nurse. The other was a NICU nurse at a Detroit hospital. And they were foster care parents who had taken in five special needs abandoned newborns that the state, ironically, asked them to take in because they were specially equipped to handle needy newborns because that was their job. And after years of loving these kids and nurturing them and, you know, taking care of them as well as any of us love our kids, they wanted to adopt these children. But, of course, the Michigan Adoption Code and the Michigan Marriage Amendment prohibited them from having joint custodial rights to the children they have raised since birth. So we challenged those laws in federal court. We, you know, were aggressively opposed by Bill Schuette in the Office of Michigan Attorney General, and of course Rick Snyder's office as well. And ultimately, we had what was only the third time in the United States history the matter of marriage equality put to a trial, and we won. And that case was appealed. Eventually, we ended up in the United States Supreme Court. We won there, and so now we have marriage equality here in the state of Michigan and also nationwide as a result of that case.
I actually, in my news role, covered the first same-sex marriage here in Houghton County. And, you know, I learned a lot about people's reaction to it when that story was posted up here locally. And, you know, there's a lot of differing opinions on it, and some of them not so pretty.
Well, I'm going to say this about it. There were so many people that were hurt by the inability to marry the person they love or have legal rights to their children. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of rights that maybe a lot of opposite sex couples don't appreciate how many rights there are and how many rights you lose when you don't have the ability to marry that person or to legally adopt your own children. I know so many people, and in this state, we're talking about tens of thousands, really hundreds of thousands of people are affected by that if you look at the number of Michiganders that identify as LGBTQ. But I didn't really know a single person that benefited from the ban on same-sex marriage or from second parent adoption for same-sex couples. I couldn't identify one person who said that their life was better because April and Jane couldn't adopt those kids. And I think that's an important point to be made in terms of the Office of Michigan Attorney General, where they spent $9 million of your tax dollars to fight that. And I think of all the people that are really suffering in this state, people who don't have clean water to drink, you know, people who have been scammed or conned by some shady payday lender or mortgage company, or, you know, the lady I met whose mother, whose elderly mother was in a nursing home and covered in 80% of her body covered in bed sores when she died because nobody was looking out for her. And these are people who really need help. And so when we talk about where we're going to spend our state tax dollars, do we want to spend it so that we can further discrimination against people, even though no one else benefits from that? Or do we want to spend that money actually helping the people in this state who need it? And that's the priorities that I want to set for this office.
Do you read the press on you downstate, like from the local newspapers? Do you subject yourself to that?
I mean, yeah, I read the articles that come out. I got a Google alert on my name, honestly. So when things come out, I read about it, you know. I make the press a little bit down there because I have the first anti-hate crimes task force in the state of Michigan, really in the whole of the United States. So we handle a lot of cases. And, you know, we have a special investigator and a special prosecutor, a special victims' rights advocate. And I'm very proud of the fact that we have now prosecuted 18 cases. 14 have gone completely through the system. We have 100% conviction rate. So we do get a lot of press on the Fair Michigan Justice Project, which is what it's called. And I like to read those articles because it reminds me of the fact that when people set their minds to it and they really identify a problem and they want to fix it, that there are ways to do that. And I'm proud of that project because I think it's a model that's now being used across the nation. And I'm proud of a lot of work that I've done. I'm happy to take any press that I get on any of the issues that I care about.
Do you feel they mischaracterized you and your campaign a little bit, especially with in the wake of the sexual harassment debate, which is, well, I call it a debate, but let's just say that it's finally a spotlight that should have been shown on the issue a long time ago. And, you know, this is an issue very important to you, but is, you know, just reading some of the articles and things and editorials written about you, I mean, they almost call you anti-man.
Yeah, it's really odd to me. First of all, you know, I did this little Facebook spot, which I, you know, I certainly didn't think that I would end up on the front page of Breitbart or the Judge Report or, you know, Seth Meyer or Jimmy Kimmel for that matter. But I was doing it in a bold manner. But I feel as though there are a lot of people who only watched a tiny 10 or 15 second segment and didn't hear the larger argument that what I was making during the course of that. And that was this. Firstly, since literally the first day that I announced I was running for this office, which was back in August, August 15th, I have heard every day since then that there are people who are opposing my candidacy for one reason and one reason only, and that's because they don't want the potential of an all-female ticket for the Democrats. You know, we have Senator Stabenow, who, of course, is the likely nominee for the Democrats for United States Senate. Gretchen Whitmer right now is leading in the polls for governor, and Jocelyn Benson is running unopposed for Secretary of State. So I think we can pretty much count on her being the nominee for the Democrats. And that leaves my position, Attorney General, and there are people who are resistant to having an all-female ticket, which is crazy to me because I was at the Democratic Convention in 2014 and we nominated all men for each of those positions, and I didn't hear anybody complaining about that. So I'm really making the larger point of several things. One is the fact that we need more women in office. Only 20% of our elected officials here in the state of Michigan are women, and that's disgraceful to me, and I think it really does contribute to a culture of abuse, because when you don't have equal numbers of men and women in positions of authority, and I'm not just talking about politics, I mean whether it's the boardroom, whether it's the newsroom, in any sphere of life, I think you see inequities, and I think it lends itself to more sexual improprieties that are taken that I think wouldn't occur if you had more women in those positions. So it was sort of the irony that every day I was seeing during that time period, some other important figure in America that was being accused of some very, very serious sexual harassment, if not in some cases sexual assault. And yet on the other hand, I'm hearing, oh, we can't have too many women on the ticket. And that bothered me a lot, and it's part of what led me to make that video. But the other thing was I wanted people to know and to understand that if I am elected to the office of Michigan Attorney General, I will not permit sexual harassment in my office. We will have a zero tolerance policy. You can be a woman working in that office, or a man for that matter, and know that incidences of sexual harassment will not be tolerated. And you can just do your job and feel free and safe and comfortable doing it without anyone harassing you in that manner. And I think that everyone should be able to say that for their workplace.
I'm going to switch things from social issues to some other things. One, let's go to the environment, because you have very unapologetically said Line 5 shut down.
Yes, I have. That's correct. I have studied the issue. I've talked to a lot of different people all over the state. And I think that we are facing what is potentially the biggest ecological and also economic catastrophe that our state might ever see. And I understand, being up here in the UP, that people have concerns, mostly propane-related concerns. And I absolutely think those need to be addressed. But there are so many different options that I have read about. And I really think our legislature and our governor need to get moving to make certain that there are no issues in terms of the ability of people in the Upper Peninsula to get any kind of resources they need. I know that that can happen. It can happen safely, and it can happen without Line 5 running.
But Enbridge in the state of Michigan reportedly worked together and have, you know, approved its safety, and then oddly, it comes out that Enbridge, well, they weren't always so up and up, and that, so, but then no action from the state to recover, other than to say, well, they better get it right next time.
You know, it's unbelievable to me, because here Enbridge, you know, they make billions and billions of dollars off of that pipeline, and yet we are trusting them to give us correct information about the safety of this pipeline, which in the event of a major spill will affect the entire state. I think it's over 80% of Michigan state residents actually get their drinking water from the Great Lakes. And then when you look at the economy, I mean, we'll be devastated if there's a spill. But I look at it, this as a former prosecutor and someone who's also done defense work. Would you ever say to someone who was accused of being a drug dealer, and I'm sorry to make that sort of comparison, but you know, go with me for a moment here. Would you ever say, listen, tell us, are you dealing drugs? And if so, how much? What's the quantity? And who are you giving it to? And if they said to you, oh, no, no, I'm not, or it's only a little bit or whatever, would you rely on that? You would do an independent investigation to see whether or not they had committed any crimes, and if so, what those crimes were. So it's insane to me that I hear time and time again our major state actors, Rick Snyder and Bill Schuette and members of the legislature, relying on the information that comes from Enbridge, which is a company that has everything to lose in the event that this line is shut down. Why would we do that? It's insane to me. And, you know, Enbridge doesn't care. They don't care about what happens to this state. That's for the people that we elect to these offices. They're supposed to be protecting us. They're not supposed to be protecting a multinational corporation that's making millions and, I'm sorry, billions of dollars off of this.
Sticking with the environment, now I met Bill Schuette when he came up here. This was actually a couple of years ago. Bill said the best way to remember his name is Bill Schuette on duty, or on duty Bill Schuette, or something like that. And it, of course, I had to chuckle and think within a year that the Flint water crisis came out. So has our Michigan legislature been on duty when it comes to protecting the citizens of the state?
Absolutely not. It's really a travesty on so many different levels. And I know for Bill Schuette, you know, he likes to talk about how he's, you know, the top cop in this state, and he's tough on crime, but he certainly has been very tough on environmental crime. And maybe he doesn't understand that polluting the environment actually does constitute a crime in this state. We have all kinds of environmental codes that exist. They're simply not being enforced. And the one thing I can say, when I go all around this state, no matter where I go, just about, people have concerns about clean drinking water. And it's so remarkably, I mean, it's shameful. It's shameful in a state where we are surrounded by over 20% of the Earth's fresh surface water. And yet we have people all around this state that don't have any clean water to drink. And this is everywhere, you know, and it's not just in Flint. Boy, I was out in Kalkaska not long ago, and a farmer came to one of my meetings that I attended, and he talked about the fact that the oil and gas companies were allowed to frack so freely in his area that when he went to turn on his kitchen tap water, he could actually light it on fire with a lighter because there was so much methane in there, and that his well was completely contaminated. He couldn't get the Office of Attorney General to pay any attention or do anything about it. And I hear those stories all over the place. The DEQ is not doing anything. The EPA certainly isn't doing anything. And our AG seems to have no concern about this whatsoever. We need to go back to a time where we had an AG that enforced environmental codes and protected people. Because frankly, if you don't have your health because, you know, you're living in the Kent County area, you're living in Rockford or Belmont, and you have your well completely contaminated because a company like Wolverine Worldwide Tannery is, you know, poisoned your well water. I mean, what do you have? These people, their property values have been devastated. They don't have clean water to drink. And this scenario repeats itself all over the state. And if we don't do something about it, something drastic, it's going to get even worse. And I think that our elected leaders, our EG in particular, owes the people who elected him to that office to enforce environmental laws.
If you're elected to the office, you'll be coming in during, I'll call it an unprecedented time of immigration. You know, certainly all of our laws regarding the subject are in flux. We don't know what's going to happen from year to year. If elected to the office, if you're directed by the federal government to crack down on illegal immigrants in the state, Governor Rick Snyder has been open about accepting refugees from other countries. So, you know, we've been one of those states where that's been welcoming to people. Would you act on that? Would you, begin a crackdown on illegal immigration in Michigan?
Yeah, I don't believe that's your job as a state attorney general to enforce federal laws that are in the province of the federal government. So whether it's these immigration policies and what ICE is doing and taking people who have immigration issues, but they've never violated state law. There are no state codes or no local ordinances that they have violated. I don't think it's your job to assist the federal authorities in scooping those people up and putting them into detention centers when they're not a threat to anyone. The other thing I'll say about that is I look at Jeff Sessions and the revocation of the Cole memorandum, where he now states that he's going to use the Department of Justice to go after people who are compliant under state law with our marijuana laws, with our medical marijuana laws. And I'm horrified by the federal overreach. I'm not going to cooperate with that if I'm Attorney General. I'm not going to help Jeff Sessions put people who are state law-abiding residents into jail and into prison. And, you know, if he wants to take me to court for that, he can go right ahead and get a court order, and I will obey a court order. Clearly, I'm not going to defy a court of law, but I'm not going to willingly cooperate with him in terms of helping him to lock up people who haven't violated state law.
Okay. Well, since you brought up the medical marijuana or marijuana laws in general, where's your stand on that? Because it could be something that's on our ballot in November. We pretty much expect it to be there for recreational legalization. As a state attorney general, or someone running for that office, your thoughts?
Well, this is what I think really sets me apart from everyone else who's running for this office, both Democrats and Republicans alike. And that's that I'm the only one running for the office of Michigan Attorney General that supports the ballot proposal to legalize recreational marijuana. And I don't arrive at that decision lightly. I spent about half of my career prosecuting marijuana cases, and then the other half defending them, as well as civil asset forfeiture cases. And I just think that, you know, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year testing marijuana, investigating and prosecuting those cases. And I just don't see how that is helpful to our communities anymore. And especially because as somebody now who handles a lot of criminal cases, especially with my hate crimes project, you know, I see rape kits that are sitting there waiting to be tested. I see cold case homicide DNA that is waiting to be tested, just so that our AG, who is seemingly obsessed with marijuana and has done everything that he can to undermine the 2008 ballot proposal, which passed, which legalized medical marijuana, I don't want to utilize the office of Michigan Attorney General to go after people who are compliant with state law. Furthermore, in terms of recreational marijuana, I'm tired of locking people up for something that I simply don't think should be a crime anymore. I don't want to see people who are selling to people under the age of 21. They should be prosecuted. I don't want to see people operating under the influence of marijuana. But other than that, I think we need to tax it. We need to regulate it. And we need to stop throwing people in jail and prison for marijuana offenses. The war on marijuana has not been successful. And I think we lose a lot of people in this state. There are far more people who are injured every year from potholes in the state of Michigan than they are from pot. And I would like to use the pot money that is generated to fill those potholes, which I think will actually protect our state residents.
I'm talking with Dana Nessel. She's the Democratic candidate for state attorney general, and appreciate you coming into, you know, our neck of the woods way up here and giving us a chance to get to know you. Besides reading a Detroit News editorial, what's a better way for people to get to know you and about your campaign?
Well, certainly they can look at my website, which is dana2018.com. But if you don't mind me saying this, a lot of people don't know that the way that we nominate our attorney general candidates, it's not done in a primary.
Oh.
So there will not be, my name will not appear on a ballot in August the way when you're voting for your state rep, or for governor, or for any of those other offices. For the down ballot races of attorney general, secretary of state, Michigan Supreme Court, Board of Education, Board of Governors, those are all decided at convention. So we're going to have, in the Democratic Party, we're going to have a convention on April 15th at Cobo Hall in Detroit. Anybody can become a member of the Michigan Democratic Party and vote. For Republicans, you have to be an elected precinct delegate, but not in our party. So literally anybody could go online right now, go to my website even, and just fill out a form, and it's free, and you can join the Michigan Democratic Party. And we understand that it is such an incredible burden and an inconvenience to get people all the way from the UP down to Detroit. But that's why my campaign wants to do something a little different. And the money that we're raising, it's not going towards billboards or splashy ads. It's going to transport. Anybody who wants to come to the convention, we'll get you there. We'll get you a bus. We'll get you a van. We will get you accommodations once you're there so that you have a place to stay. We just want as many people as possible to be able to participate in the process. And as long as you sign up by March 15th online, go on my website. Let us know. Let us know that you want to go to Detroit to vote. We'll get you there.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.